Welkie, welkie to Ben Splaining, the podcast where every fortnight is a little longer than the last. No, it's not that I was disorganized and didn't get this third episode out on time. It was just your breathless anticipation has bedazzled your sense of time. So on this podcast, I talk to a special guest about an idea that they know more about than me, and then I talk just as much as they do anyway. And I'm sure what most people have said is their favorite thing about the podcast, except for me saying welkie, welkie all the time, my famous catchphrase, is the theme music. Well, I have bad news for those fans, because the theme music is done, is over. It's had its day in the sun, and that day has ended. And now that night has fallen, I'm pleased to announce that there is going to be a new theme song. And that is actually what this episode's about. Mitchell Pasmans is a sound designer, drummer, multi-instrumentalist, musician, musical theorist, lots of things. And on today's episode, he very kindly crafts a new podcast theme song for me from scratch, while I kind of annoy him with very basic questions about music theory and things. We talk about music, we talk about the creative process, about artists, about perfectionism, and as usual, I kind of awkwardly wind the conversation back to talking about capitalism and automation. Even the episode that's supposed to be a break from politics still has me talking about politics. Today's non-existent sponsor is a regionally specific small business whose owners clearly don't understand the global nature of new media audiences. Manhattan Cov Fei Fei House is New York's first ever cafe based on President Donald Trump's historic typo, Cov Fei Fei. Will it ever get old? Located on the corner of 6th and 33rd, Koreatown, New York City. Finally, this podcast is recorded on land that was stolen from the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and I want to acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. It also contains a little bit of swearing, but not too much, but a little bit. So, buckle in. Pour yourself a fine crystal glass of sherry and have a Ben Splaining time. I don't know. I feel like my intros are just really starting to break down. I'm three episodes.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Mitch Splaining with your host, Mitch.
You can't say that.
I can't say that. This is my podcast now. This is my study. All right.
So, you just put down your wine to have a drink of your scotch.
It's my Bundaberg chaser. Don't judge me. All right. So, coming off such highbrow topics as the commodification of time and gender politics, gender queer politics, that sort of thing. Here's a synth I made where every note is me saying Ben.
This is incredible.
So that's pretty fun. That's pretty cool.
Whoa. This appeals to my narcissism on so many levels. I want to...
So
I should probably introduce you.
Oh, yeah, that's probably a good start, actually.
So, welkie welkie to Mitch Splaining. You may notice that the sound quality is better than usual.
And well, it might not be. I haven't actually checked yet.
It's probably going to be better than my laptop speaker from my 2009 MacBook.
That's probably true.
And that's because we're in an actual studio today with Mitchell Pasmans, who is a sound designer, multi-instrumentalist, and visual artist, who is going to be talking to us about sound and things.
Sound and things with Mitchell. Not an actual studio just yet, just moved house, so it's still got some work to do. I got all these foam panels I need to put up and shit. But all the instruments plugged in, so that's good. So,
there are so many instruments in here. There's a keyboard. There's some sort of large cylindrical one. There are some sort of wooden things. Guitars. A different guitar. Machines of various kinds.
Bass guitars. So today, on the Mitch Splaining podcast, we will be making a new theme song for Ben's podcast. Because his original theme song, made in GarageBand 9, was it?
Yep.
Yep. While Mastercraft in musical creating would probably use some work.
I disagree. So let's... Whoa.
How dare you?
Can you do a record scratch noise on any of these machines?
Hold on. I got this thing.
Yeah. Record scratch. I don't think there's anything wrong with the theme song, and I'd like to hear what you think is wrong with it. So I'm just going to play it again now.
Okay.
I put a lot of work into this.
Yes, that's fine. So...
See, you can see that in the first section, I have two different loops.
I know, you have an A and a B section. Questions, first off, yeah. Starting with. Why such an ominous intro? Are you emerging from the shadows to play your...
Well, that's what I thought. I'm more of a visual person.
So you work in... That's fine.
I think that the reader, or listener, as it may be, I'm a visual person. Is lying there on their bed as they listen, perfectly still, and with their eyes closed, they see a field of mist.
Interesting.
And emerging from the field of mist is a tall, shadowy figure, extremely... And then it... Missed a part, and it's me. It's Ben.
Okay.
Ready to do some explaining.
So it's very clear that the second section of the podcast is just a backing track from a really shoddily made porno from the 80s. So, what are you emerging from the mist to do exactly?
Explain. Explain, baby, explain.
Yeah.
This is getting too meta.
Yes, okay. So, like. So I'm just gonna assume your process here. You went into GarageBand 9.
Yes.
You went to the music loops section.
Yes.
You took some of the music loops there.
Yes.
You found ones that sort of match each other and just put them together. And
yes.
Okay. That's fine. That's the way to.
That's my understanding of how music is yes. created.
That's how it's always worked. David Bowie, he only uses GarageBand 9.
Yeah, real tasteful.
Wow, mate. Okay, good stuff. So, there's nothing wrong with that style of creating, but I just don't think the loops in GarageBand 9 are very good. So we're going to do a whole new theme song.
Thank you.
No problem.
So, Mitch has very generously offered to make a new theme song for the podcast, and he's going to be talking me through it. In our process. First ever live episode of Ben's Fantasy.
Streaming through your phone.
Oh, is that what live means? No, this is happening in real time is what I mean. It's
okay. So, first off, what sort... Actually, I'm not even going to ask what sort of theme you want because I'll disagree with you.
Don't does this still play Ben?
It does, but that note doesn't. That's fine.
This is amazing. No, don't turn it off. Please don't turn it off. So, let me show you the extent of my musical knowledge.
Okay, on the bend.
Where's the B one?
That's the B one. Okay. I think we have our theme song.
I see some haughty gestures to those who didn't hear those claps. And
it didn't come through the audio very well.
Yeah.
So, all right. So if I was doing a regular intro for just some average Joe podcast, normally they like to do some real down to earth. So they'll have one dude strums and chords on a ukulele or some shit and sing a real simple melody. Makes them appear sort of more wholesome, down to earth, sort of chill.
I don't want that. I want to appear as a god.
I know you. So, what you want to be big, grand, with a little bit of sort of recognized narcissism, you know? Just a touch. So
I like to mix my ludicrous arrogance and cripplingly low self-esteem, so yeah. They sort of balance each other out.
Yeah, so put that on the scale. Originally, my first idea was to have an entire choir of people singing Ben.
Oh my god.
And for it to be super cinematic and dramatic. But couldn't get a choir in here. Don't have the microphones for it.
All right, the podcast's off.
Second idea, I was going to do like real dramatic strings, which I can still do. Like, I got the samples and everything. But people don't want to listen to like Hans Zimmer before they chill out and listen to a podcast. So
you got to crawl before you Zimmer, as the old saying goes.
So my final idea, I got this sample a while back from a hip hop sample list. So I'm going to use the same method that you used for your Garage by Night podcast, but I'm going to do it better than you.
Okay.
And that's how that's, all, cool. That's all it boils down to.
Can I just say, so are you a Hans Zimmer man? that was a joke because you're wearing a Bob Dylan t-shirt.
I sold this Bob Dylan t-shirt or someone else, so let's not bring that up in the podcast. Yeah, so this sample here, right?
Yeah.
Really game showy, sort of spicy. Sort
yeah,
of,
I like it.
A little bit of lo-fi in there as well, so it's sort of like blends itself quite warmly. It's nice. Also, I should mention now, because in my career I have realized it's impossible to talk about sound without occasionally sounding a little bit pretentious. So I have set up the pretentious board here. Whenever anyone says anything arrogant or pretentious, just...
Can I have a go?
You can have a go. You got to say something pretentious before you hit it.
Lugubrious.
Okay. Yeah. So we're just going to put that aside, and whenever I say something that's a little bit arrogant, I'm going to give a little stroke. Keep me rounded. I like to keep it there. So this here, right?
A little stroke.
A little stroke. A little tinkle. So it's definitely a lot to work with there. It's sort of like
incredible
game showy, which is what I think says you. You sort of seem like a family game show host a lot of the time. So I'm going to build that. And then what I wanted to do was I wanted to do this sort of record scratch noise. It's not really a record scratch, but like it's a good transition into a next part. And I wanted to sort of keep the vibe from your GarageBand 9. Except instead of porno funk, I wanted just like a nice hip hop soul sort of jam.
Yes, sick.
So I haven't started making it yet, but we're gonna go from scratch. So you gotta set up the kick. You gotta set up the drums first.
So and you are a drummer.
I am a drummer.
How long have you drummed for?
Year 7. How old was I in year 7? 3 years old.
you're a prodigy.
Actually. So, I like to start with the drums as just sort of like a bass, sort of influence the rest of the thing. Rhythm is really important, and people overlook a lot of that.
So, I heard a theory that the reason why we like drums is because of our own heartbeats and the internal rhythms of our anatomy.
I heard a fact that we eat 10 spiders every night. So I think it's just one of those things that people started saying that sounds true. There is a lot of reasons why rhythm is the way it is. A lot of composing, I find, I like to spend the first, say, half of the time just finding a real nice sonic palette to work with. Just because I just feel like you don't need to have the melody to be that good for it to be a good song. Like, Kurt Cobain wasn't a good guitarist. He wrote like 3 songs that used exactly the same chord progression and rhythm on the guitar. But like, the sounds he made still sounded good when he did them.
Until Dave Grohl killed him.
Yeah.
Cold blood.
That's how that went.
So what's the sonic palette, Mitchell?
So
like mostly blues and that kind of beige color on his underside. It's a little Sonic the Hedgehog joke there.
That's just the sounds you're working with. So like, and how they sort of meld together.
Mm.
So real nice warm sort of kick, sort of like if you bring it up on the spectrometer over here. See, you got a lot so of stuff. So
there's a thing that's come up with like a sort of mountain. It's graphs and things.
Yeah, so it's basically a graph that's sort of denoting the amplitude of each frequency in that note.
Mm.
So it's got a lot of stuff sitting around 100 hertz. Which is like sort of a real nice warm sort of area, like bass and the kick need to sit in that to sort of give it warmth and sort of cover that low frequency. This snare I got, not entirely happy with it, but we will work. It's also quite a punchy snare, but a little bit too punchy. There's a lot of stuff happening
in the frequency. Sharp.
Sharp.
Zesty. That's one zesty snare.
Spicy, you're just saying things. I have this hi-hat, which came from the same sample bank as this kick, but it's too trashy. Too much dust on it. Quite sort of distorted, so I've got another one up here.
Oh, that's kind of more clean, gentle.
Yeah, hi-hat. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about sonic palette.
Yeah, sick.
And we're making a soul song, we're making a soul jam, so...
I have a great deal of soul.
Sure. And... Sorry. next up, we got the bass, because the bass is obviously...
It's all about that bass.
We have to make a decision right here and now. Are we going to go major key or minor key?
What's the difference?
Okay. That's D sharp major, which is, like, tonally identical to C minor. Just sort of more sorrowful... angsty, sort of dreary sort of scale.
I like it.
When it comes to soul, you mostly use pentatonic minor, so you skip the second, the sixth, the second and the sixth, so it's more... yeah. Because these notes, in particular... They're sort of the most disharmonic.
Disharmonic.
Enharmonic in that scale, so that's nice. Like it's pentatonic scale. There's five notes in the scale.
Pentatonic, so penta as in five. Right, okay, yes.
In sol they'll mostly stick around the pentatonic scale. Yes. They'll add some blues notes in, so a flat five, so
I like that.
Yeah, that's the blues minor scale.
Yeah, of course.
So it's just a pentatonic with a flat five. Sometimes I'll add a major seven.
It's even got a gospel kind of
way. Yeah, the whole blues minor nonsense. Keep in mind, I know what all the notes do. I don't know how to speak them.
Yeah,
I don't know how the words good. So I'm going to rely on you.
Almost tone deaf. So this is really interesting.
We got someone who talks good and someone who notes good. So when we're deciding whether to use a minor or major soul song.
Yes.
Sort of a minor soul will be more of that like sort of cool, laid-back, sort of walking the streets, like, feeling like a badass sort of thing.
That sounds like me.
You disagree. But whereas doing major stuff, when we come to the bass, so I'll get the bass going. Got here. So, minor. Walking down the street, looking like a badass. When we're switching to major...
Mm. Just more funky, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So most funk, and actually most soul is in major, and then you get the songs in minor, and they'll be sort of that sort of cool guy, the cool guy song.
That's also like me.
Okay. So
I think I trust you completely. What do you think?
I think we should just give them both a shot, see how we go. Wanted to have some brass in there.
Yeah.
Because fucking who doesn't love brass? Brass is great. Can I swear on this podcast? I'm going to swear.
You can. In the second episode, there's a lot of swearing. Okay. In the first episode, I said fuck once.
Shit, dude.
But it's towards the end.
Did you cut it out? Or?
Well, I left it in. The thing is, I don't know how to put an explicit tag on iTunes, so I'm really worried that
it's going to get taken down.
The iTunes people will come and drag me away in the night.
So I got these brass samples. So I got a lot of soul-oriented samples, so it's working out quite well. I like to use the... So this particular synth has some pre-recorded rhythms and melodic mm-hmm. passages, so you can add it with the melody. I'm probably going to make my own melody because I don't like machines telling me what to do, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
But I do like to start with the rhythms because they were recorded that way and it sounds more natural. Whereas if I was just, say, going to regular polyphonic. Sounds like a dude playing brass on a keyboard.
It does.
So, back to the animator here.
Oh, so this is sort of like, it's you're just holding down the key for that one.
Yeah,
and it's playing, doing the rhythm itself, for you.
Because it was recorded.
As opposed to you playing it.
It's a guy recorded playing that rhythm on every note.
So, with... This is a little I know. So, with these sort of... sounds, these are actually recorded instruments, not synthetic.
Synthetic.
No, you know what I mean? Made on computers. No.
Synthetic
you know.
Is the right word. It's just you said it weird. So Kontakt is a sort of plugin that plays sample libraries.
Yeah.
Okay. They're all sort of recorded themselves. I'll make another one.
How long have you been doing sound design for, Mitch?
Well, I've... Pretty much since high school, I've been, probably about year 8 or so, I started, downloading legally all a bunch of DAWs to sort of, mess around, play shitty dubstep with. And when dubstep was a thing, I was big in the dubstep scene. But then I went to university and studied my bachelor's in applied music, audio production.
And so you're, what, 39 now?
Well, I started high school when I was 3, so I'm about 12 at the moment.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so it's always been sort of something I like to do, but
And you have your own business?
I do. Sort of up and coming at the moment, Skeletone Audio.
Skeletone Audio.
I wanted it to be a pun, and it's like skeleton.
Oh, right, yes.
Got it?
Yeah. I'll put that in the show notes for anyone interested.
Please, thank you.
Mitchell apparently works for free.
God, don't say that. All right, so I'm going to just bring it up here, say an organ sound. Probably going to use an organ in this song.
Like a liver or a pancreas.
Do we have I should set up a keyboard to do a bagunts.
Oh, it doesn't say Ben anymore.
So, gospel church.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't like some gospel church? Basic gospel.
Satan. I really like that.
Yeah, so that's actually a recorded organ that they've sort of organized so each note just plays a recording of that note.
Yeah.
And then they've done a whole bunch of stuff with it, so it sounds more organic.
Oh,
organic. I just made a pun.
You also said organized before, which you realized. There's also a pun.
Yeah. So I tend to use a lot more sample banks than I do regular synthesizers unless I'm doing electro music, obviously.
Yeah.
Because, all right, so there's pros and cons of having a sample of an organ instead of an actual organ. It is a recording, so everything you do to change it is just altering the recording.
Yes.
But with a, for example, I'll bring up a massive here. Explain what this looks like.
So there's sort of like a panel with different dials and things, but it's all on the screen.
So that's synth. Mm. So that's a synthetic noise, but with the synth I can change like every aspect of it. So like if I wanted to, for example, make one of the oscillations really high.
Ooh.
Or like make it so it was noise. I can do whatever I want.
Eternal void of space.
Yeah, exactly.
Gaping endless.
I have plugins for that as well. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a different screen, a sample bank, and
yeah,
a synthetic synth. Back to actually making this goddamn song. Sorry, it's getting chilly in here. I'm going to put on a robe.
Should pause?
I should pause. I will pause, actually.
I was not expecting you to say rope.
And we're back!
We are back indeed. Welcome back to Ben Splaining Podcast, where Mitchell records a theme tune for me. If I lost my edge, has this show jumped the shark, Mitchell?
I think you're thrown off by my natural charisma.
That is a pretty impressive Batman dressing gown.
Okay, so probably want to start with the bass and rhythm. I like to start with the rhythm section.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we? So we're doing major key, D sharp. I am way too high. What we got? Something like that. Sort of just sort of relaxing, like not doing too much on the thing.
I like it.
Maybe throw in some thirds.
For Seinfeld.
It's because it's a bass guitar. Is that what you get that, Ben? Wow, this robe is fucking boiling. Alright. So, I've just put together a simple drum beat here.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's what is important when making drum beats, especially with soul and hip-hop style stuff, is... See this grid here?
So there's a grid on the screen.
Yeah, so these are perfect divisions of notes. So like
yes,
quarter notes, eighth notes, all that stuff. You don't want to be exactly on them. Because,
really? Why is that?
Okay.
So, no, I know. That wasn't condescending. I just actually have no idea why that would be the case.
Okay, so like if you're exactly on fractions of the notes, it doesn't sound human. It'll sound robotic because no human can actually play perfectly in time. It's just can not
you,
possible.
Do you have an example in hand or is that a bit too...
I can just make one.
Yeah, cool. That's really interesting. That I like that because I'm profoundly skeptical of technology and fear the coming obsolescence of the human experience in the face of automated systems.
As you should. Thank you. Alright, so let's just make a drum beat that's just flat on the beat. Robot drum beat. And so then this will be the difference between, say, your shitty Garage 9 thing and one that's actually got a little bit of work put into it.
Oh, yeah.
No offense.
I spent far longer than I should have on that.
And I assume you did.
So he's dragging little rectangles all around the screen.
Okay, so it's the flat, grade 8. And keep in mind, so like I haven't changed the velocity, so the intensity with which they're played on these, so it's completely flat across the board.
Yes.
That's another thing that it is impossible for a human to do. So if I'm hitting drums with a drumstick, right?
Yes.
I'm throwing the drumstick, I'm using like an amount of muscles, six muscles, hitting it, and it's changing every time because I am not a robot person. If I just set up all my songs to just be...
My name is Ben.
Okay, we're going to stop that right there. It sounds a little bit too robotic.
Yes.
It sounds a little bit too straight. So, it's always good to throw it off a bit. Really, really good drummers, they will have the control to throw it off, like, naturally.
Mm.
Like, who's the guy from The Roots? He's got the hair. He's on...
I know what he looks like.
What he looks like. He's a really good drummer. He'll play slightly behind the beat almost all the time to sort of give that sort of laid back feel. Mm. Whereas like you got someone like Ringo Starr, for example.
Yes.
Play a little bit before, like in front of the beat, and just like give it a really energetic sort of driving sort of thing. Ringo Starr, good drummer. Who would have thought it?
Really?
Yeah.
Bad name.
So, like, the speed I got here. It's a little bit behind the beat. Sort of, like, lay back a little bit and feel that sort of... I always like the picture, like, driving a car real coolly. Like, leaning real far back on the seat, holding one hand down the steering wheel. That's what I like to picture when doing that. Other people picture different things when they're making music.
So how visual is your process, do you think?
Really visual, I'd say. Can't explain how, but like... So, when I'm composing and I get to a part that I want to like actually lock in and see if it's worth locking in...
Yes.
I pretty much have to sit in front of the speakers and close my eyes and put my head down to sort of like... that sensory deprivation sort of thing. To just... You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I know some musicians, like a classical flautist who has synesthesia.
Yeah. So, like, they... Every noise they see is colours.
Yes. Yeah, and there's kind of different forms of that, and people kind of associating different senses in different ways. Would you describe it as anything kind of along that spectrum?
I more sort of like, sort of see scenes, like sort of from a movie or something like that. So when I'm doing like sound design and stuff, the scene will be set out and I'll try and match the music to that scene.
Yes.
So it's sort of a reverse process, whereas if I'm just making a soul song... I like, so for example, this first section here, that's Ben Hickey walking onto stage wearing a like flared disco outfit and like he's about to put on his Ben Slaney shirt, and that's really cool. And the soul is just, so the reason the soul section's there is you want something to sort of like chill the audience out and then fade out into the talking.
Yes.
So you did it with your GarageBand 9.
Yes.
It was a very jolty fade, might say. A little bit too flat. Sounded very unnatural. So basically we're going to set up a beat and then we're going to get a nice fade on it. Natural sound of fade. And that's going to go into you talking. What was I doing again? Bass. The most important instrument.
I'm a big bass fan.
So I'm just going to lay down like... a simple bass track, and then I'll start laying down melodies over that, and if the melody doesn't fit with it, I'll switch the bass around to fit the melody, switch the whole rhythm section to split the melody if I find one that I really like. Or if I find a bass that I really like, I'll switch the melody to switch the bass, and then you just sort of work like that until you have something that sounds good. Putting back on the Batman robe. But... that was sloppy.
That's really cool. So Mitchell was playing all of that on this sort of small piano that's attached to his television.
Take two.
This time he silently recorded it over the ones that was there.
No, that was just another take. I deleted the first one because I didn't think it was adequate.
So, do you think of yourself as a perfectionist, and how much is that necessary for your work, and how much does it get in the way if you are a perfectionist? Follow up question before the first question was answered. Great interview technique, Kiki.
Fuck. I think that I have never actually made something that I think was perfect.
Hmm.
Like, I am my harshest critic, and I actually hate most of the stuff that I make. But I get it to a point where I'm proud of it, and then I hand it off. It's sort of good and bad, because, like, I'll never write a song that I'll release as like an artistic expression of myself because I never think it'll be good enough. But doing sound design for other people, that's fine. I'll just get it until they think it's perfect, and then that's fine. I think just my standards are too high, to be honest.
So how much of your music do you have squirreled away in?
Oh, too much. Way too much.
I've had the pleasure of hearing a DJ set that you did. And it was amazing.
I was very drunk. Yeah. That was back in high school. I used to make dubstep remixes of things. So I did a dubstep remix of the battle theme from Pokemon Red. It's a real jam.
Banger. It's a banger. So have you done many solo gigs or recordings?
I've been sort of working up the courage to, like, release a whole EP I've been working on, but...
That's awesome!
It's a slow process, because, like I said, I'm too harsh on myself, and I never think that's actually good enough. But, back to the matter at hand...
Yeah, it's so normal for creative people who are good. So, semi-breves are still used. Is it true that the breve existed as a medieval note and the medieval musical language was slightly different to that which we have today?
So, the European style of, like, semi-quavers, quavers, crotchets.
Yeah, sorry, that was actually quite a,
yeah,
an imperialist little... Gidons,
breves, thing. All that stuff. I tend to just use quarter notes, eighth notes.
Really?
Okay. Fractions. So, like, when it comes down to it, a crotchet is just a quarter of the bar. So, like, say, quarter note.
So, how widespread is that? And how often are those?
Oh, it's just the, like, the American system and the European system.
Really?
I'm actually not sure, because a lot of, like, Indian and Middle Eastern music sort of evolved differently.
Mm.
Actually, I don't know what they use. Probably some crazy Indian word. Ugh. But I always feel like it's easier to just sort of say, like, eighth note. It's an eighth of the bar. Back to the matter at hand. That's it. That's the one. That's what we want. Let's do it. Be doing this in the wrong order. I feel like putting the trumpet before I put the keys is a foolish
sounds mistake. Really good though.
Yeah, but I feel like it might influence the rest of the song a bit too much before I start actually making what the song is. Keys.
This sounds even better than my old opening.
You had an old opening?
No, the old
thing. Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, thanks. I aim for the stars.
And if you don't hit them, you might just reach the moon. Have you heard that saying?
I have.
Normally people do it the other way around, that aim for the moon, and if you miss, you might just hit the stars. Like, the stars are much further away.
We're going to overshoot the moon.
By, like, 50 light years.
Yeah. I always like the saying, the entirety of the saying, great minds think alike, but fools never differ. Fools rarely differ. It's like, the entirety of the saying, like, makes it so the first half of the saying that everyone says is entirely discredited.
I've never heard the second half. Yes.
Great minds think alike, but fools rarely differ. So great, you don't know whether you're a great mind or a fool. Because they're both thinking alike. Alright. Keys or an organ?
Organ.
Why?
Because it makes me think of myself as a preacher man. No, keys then. You said why.
Okay, so let's bring it up on this keyboard over here, right? So
it's a shout out to my Catholic roots.
This is just going to be a sort of eighth note driving thing to just sort of like bring in the chords. We're going D major. D major triad, that's fine. Or we've got an organ here.
Interesting that the texture of the sound completely changes the flavor. I really don't have the language to talk about.
It's a sonic palette. Yeah. It's a sonic palette.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling keys.
Yeah. I trust you.
Major key sort of soul song. I'd like to do keys a little bit more. Starting from scratch. Let's do it with a nice little... Change the velocity of those so it appears a little less dumb. Like I said, if you have every note playing at exactly the same velocity, it doesn't sound human at all.
Yeah. It sounds like some sort of shrill, semi-transparent alien creatures.
Yep.
Kindly creatures, but creatures not of this world.
Of course. And I feel like it's acceptable to copy and paste entire bars, because by the end of a bar, you've forgotten the exact velocity of everything the bar before. So,
interesting. Mitchell is still sort of dragging little rectangles and diamonds and spots all around the screen. His hands are moving rapidly, sort of dancing over the cursor is dancing over the page.
Yes,
is what I'd say.
Is what you would say.
I have no idea what's going on really, except that there are sounds.
I may switch.
And it looks symmetrical. It's patterny. Sometimes. So what really interests me about this process is the way that you seem to be integrating both, I guess, what I would conceive of as a kind of traditional, manual kind of way of making music.
Yep.
As in actually playing keys with this kind of much more traditional computer interface of point and click kind of stuff.
Well, you say traditional computer interface, but this sort of like MIDI process is fairly young. It's only been around since 20 years or so. Like, the old school day of doing, if I wanted to lay a keys track, it would be a lot easier. You'd have to get a keyboardist in.
Yes.
Lay it to tape, and then working with, like, a 12-track tape, you'd either have to bounce it down to another track to be able to fit it into the track.
Mm.
But these days, like, if I wanted to lay down a keys track, I just draw it. I draw it on the thing, and it does the thing.
So, two things. How much of an impact has that had on popular music? That process?
You could definitely hear the early stages of it. So, like... Alright, so take the 80s, for example.
I remember them well.
A shrill and pointless decade. to be sure. But so they were in the early days of like digital synths, and they thought they were fucking top shit. They're like, this is the future of music. This is great. And then they wrote all these songs that had these really advanced sort of digital synths in them, and they did not age well at all. Like, you listen to songs from the 80s now, and it's like, wow. But at the same time, this process I'm doing now where, so pop music, current pop music, actually, it's difficult to say. There was a period like 2009, right? Which was, I think, the year, what's it? Black Eyed Peas, fucking, gonna be a good night. That absolute atrocious song.
Yes. And I believe that was also the height of the subprime mortgage crisis.
Absolutely. And I think those might be related. LMFAO with all their...
Their
bullshit nonsense. That sort of music started taking over because people realized that there was more of a market for songs in like nightclubs and stuff. They get more played through nightclubs as dance music and shit. Before that, it was like Mariah Carey with a light R&B jam pop nonsense thing. But so there is been evolutions in pop music around that time, but it all the backing tracks for that pop music. So most number one hits are composed by two guys at the moment. It's Dr. Really? Luke and some other guy. They're produced by those two. There's another dude who's recently entered the scene. I forget the names. I don't care about all that. But like, it's become too easy to make music, which is a good and a bad thing. Because on the one hand, you've got a bunch of independent indie artists who can write a song out of their bedroom and release it. And so Kimbra's album, first album, I forget what it was called, but it was fucking amazing. Vows? Yeah, Vows. Great album. She recorded most of the vocals for it in her bedroom, I'm fairly sure.
Yeah, well.
Just with a single microphone. It was mixed at Sing Sing, which is the biggest studio in Melbourne. But yeah, like, the creative process can be done entirely in your bedroom, which is amazing, and it's a great thing. So there's good and bad. If you don't, it all comes down to the pure heart rule. Like, if you put your heart into it, it'll end up being good. But if you just want to make a backing track for, say, a podcast intro, and you don't care about it at all, it's going to come out sounding like that. So I've moved this around just a little bit. Probably a little bit too much, actually. You want to get it just slightly off the beat, but not that far off the beat, because otherwise you'll sound stupid.
So that's pretty insane to me that there's that level of concentration of, you know, number one hits being recorded by a couple of dudes.
Yeah. And so when I say most number one hits, I mean they've recorded a lot. Like,
yeah,
I can Google it now, but yeah, Googling on podcasts isn't good. Continue.
Yeah, so I wonder what you said before about how in the olden days you'd have to get I love saying the olden days. It's so quaint.
You mean like 15 years ago?
Yeah. You need to get a keyboard in.
Yeah.
Keyboardist.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do that. And now, but so like, I'm really interested in automation at the moment. Is that, are some musicians struggling because of that?
Absolutely. So it is really difficult to get work as a session violinist at the moment. And the reason for that is fairly simple. Hold on. Bear with me.
So Mitchell played that using the keyboard.
Yeah, so like, and it sounds good enough. Good enough to do most sound work. So like, if I was recording number one for a kid, I'd get a violin player in. But if I'm doing, like, the soundtrack to, like, a documentary for ABC or something, I got samples for that shit. And they're recorded. They're in concrete. I don't need to get a guy playing violin. But as a result of that, if I was a violinist trying to find work recording violin, it would be almost impossible at the moment.
Yeah, so that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even aware of that. I'd thought of, you know, I'm more aware of it in terms of writing and a few other industries and the ones we all hear about. But, yeah, to think that a craft that is so, so ancient.
Yeah, it's disappearing.
Yeah, and seems kind of so pure in some ways. Like, I think a bunch of philosophers used to speak about music as the purest form of art because it's so abstract and not sullied by material things and the kind of the removal from direct experience that comes with words and word and thought and that sort of thing. And to think that that too is also kind of not disappearing, but eroding as a viable way to make a living.
Yeah, well, kind of in a lot of ways,
tragic.
In one way, by using a string sample that's recorded, you're removing a lot of the human elements, like mistakes, like slightly missed notes, but all those human stuff, which you can, if you're really good at programming, you can get them in there, but it's not exactly the same, and it'll never be exactly the same. So there is always room for getting an actual musician in and doing that shit.
Of course.
We're never going to get rid of that.
If you can't afford it, though.
If you can't afford it.
It's a quarter of the price. You're going to...
That's less than a quarter of the price. This cost me fuck all.
Yeah.
But, like...
We are... listeners should know that we are actually hiring a classical violinist. He's standing in the corner, so the VA.
Very quiet.
But he's just... We've decided to go with the... The program, because it's easier.
Yeah.
Sorry, Olivier. He's nodding.
Yes. Just stick that.
So, this is really interesting that we're actually introducing small errors so that it more appeals to us as humans.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating, considering how much of technology seems to be about kind of moving towards precision and getting things exactly on the beat.
The fact that's
not what we actually want.
Yeah, a lot of that comes down to musical style. So something like a straight house music techno hit, they probably wouldn't be worrying about getting stuff off the beat as much because that's the genre. That's what they've come to expect from that genre. But if you're trying to replicate a soul band, you can't do that with like having everything robotically played because it's a soul band. There is something ironic about remaking a soul band on a computer. It's like
this seems like such a really powerful example of this thing of us being analog animals in a digital world. So are you pessimistic or hopeful or what? Because these obviously are also incredibly enabling technologies that allow people to create more and better art.
Like, there's more music now than there ever has been at any point in history. There's more people making music, and music genres are progressing faster and faster. Like, you look through history and it's like classical, baroque, romantic, and then you've got like other stuff coming in, but that's over hundreds and hundreds of years, and now we're like, you look to modern music and it's progressing at a rate like a new genre will appear. You know how many different genres of electro there are at the moment?
No,
it's
absurd.
Like it's like, even like something like hip hop, trip hop, jungle, like trap hop,
What's trap hop?
Trap hop is... it's a type of electro where all the drum beat is made with 808 samples.
What's 808?
808's an analog drum kit. There's so much to explain that's apart from the genre itself.
Yes.
And those are all things that are just emerging because there's so many people making music and they're all trying to find a section for them.
That's really
exciting. And then that comes back to like the information age, like the internet's a thing now and that's good and bad. It's like, if I wanted someone in, like, Portugal to hear my song, chuck it on SoundCloud, send me a link. It's like...
yeah, so it's really exciting. So the problem... sorry, if you'll allow me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is... guess what I'm going to say?
Something pretentious.
Problem is capitalism. If I may Ben-splain.
You may Ben-splain.
So the problem isn't the technology in itself. It's the fact that we have our society organized in a way that isn't designed to maximize the fostering of human creativity and happiness and endeavor and pleasure and things like that. And so the fact that people can make more music more interestingly and that's being done is an amazing thing. It's just that because of the supply and demand and the free market, meaning that people have to, the way people spend their time has to also work with a particular way with scarcity to justify their livelihood.
People will always follow their passions. They'll always they'll always be making music. But the fact that they be having to make music in their spare time while they hold down a full-time job, there's going to be...
that's terrible.
That's bad. But, like, what do you... it's kind of a difficult issue, because you can't just... I want to be a musician, give me money. It doesn't work like that. There's...
if music is something we value...
but there's so many people who... I'm going to sound like a jerk here. I'm going to ring this bell in advance. Are bad at music. But think that they're good at music. And, like, I might be being overly critical as someone who thinks that I'm bad at music, but
it's... you're all very good at music.
And that's why people who think that strumming two chords on a guitar and singing a melody that's almost identical to a Nickelback song, but slightly different enough, makes them music, and they're angry that they can't get paid.
But surely, though, the more people you have who can get by, like, get by doing what they love, the more...
so you just want to throw every average musician at a wall and hopefully one will be the next...
yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, if there was an economic system that maximized people's ability to pursue their passions without having to worry about feeding themselves and finding shelter... and if we design society in such a way where we're like, okay, how can the biggest number of people live a fulfilling life? Yeah. Rather than how can we maximize GDP? How can these small amount of companies profit the best?
I think that good music always finds its way through the mold. Like, bad music will too. There'll always be a band that, like, through, like, having the right connections or having the right sort of motivations and knowing the right people will get on Spotify and they'll have an ad that everyone without Spotify premium will have to listen to, and then they'll be like, oh, they're good enough, I'm just going to listen to them, and people are going to find them that way. But if, like, someone who's writing real heartfelt music that's super listenable and resonates with people, that's going to cut through anyway, I think. I hope. But having said that, there's probably, like, someone who's written the next Wonderwall just sitting there, doesn't have an audience at all.
Yeah, true. Well, I guess I wonder how many people even get to record it, though, is the thing. So,
it's
Oscar Wilde has this great analogy where he talks about the fact that so many of the, you know, the great artists of our time that we think of, the Mozarts and the great writers and other people. Great examples there. no, but a lot of these people traditionally, before kind of the 20th century, all came from a pretty small segment of the ruling class because they were basically the only people who had the actual access to the education and leisure time and equipment to create what we now consider the greatest art and music and literature of all time. How many Mozarts or Bob Dylans on your t-shirt are single moms who have never had a chance?
Not my t-shirt.
are single moms who've never had a chance to pursue those passions.
At this current point in time, if I wanted to... Alright, so Sufjan Stevens, great artist.
Yep.
He recorded one of his earlier albums in a room playing guitar with an SM57 microphone. $200.
Mm-hmm.
$200 for that microphone. Not a great interface he was using either, but because he poured his heart and soul into that song, and he played it well, like impeccably, that is a popular album and it gave him the funds to pursue the rest of his career. Now, if I wanted to get a sound that was in the quality of something from... Well, I guess it's difficult to say. If I wanted to get something that the quality was acceptable, I wouldn't have to spend more than $1,000.
Yeah.
I'd have to gather $1,000, and then the rest is just know-how. The rest is just learning. So, the Strokes first album, the album with Reptilia on it, I forget what it's called. Great album, awfully recorded, sounded like trash. But they had a particular style they were going for, and they nailed it perfectly. Yeah. And the songs were there to support it. So, it's good and bad.
Yeah.
There's less of that divide now between, like, in the 80s, I need to get, like, a producer to really like my band, and then I'd have to sit down in a studio for a month and put everything to tape, run it through a, like... $400,000 Neve console and then run it through like a tape recorder and get it down to vinyl and have it played that way. Whereas now I can just...
And dealing with an industry that's like often quite inclusive and patriarchal and all that other kind of stuff that you have.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's good and bad.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of shitty music. There's a lot of like SoundCloud rappers who are trying their best, then they're pouring their heart and soul into it, but they're not very good. But we're in a society where everything everyone does is like, try your best.
Yeah,
try your best.
Which is nice.
And it's good. Everyone throws their stuff at the wall, and the people who are good, they will get what they deserve.
Mm.
I sound like a douche when I talk about...
No, this is great. Why do people like auto-tune? Because I really, really... Like, you know, you listen to all of these young people music.
There's no music they have these days.
All the Justin Biebers and so on and so forth. And there's all the just, like, mega auto-tune. And I just find it, like, unbearable.
Auto-tune can be used well.
I feel like I mean...
Bon Iver. Off the bat. Bon Iver.
You need to beat for Bon Iver.
Alright, so...
Is his real name like John Mongler?
Yeah, or something like that. So he has a lot of songs where he uses auto-tune. He has Woods from his first EP, I think, where he uses auto-tune and pours like a lot of layers on it and does stuff creatively.
Mm.
He's working creatively to find a new sound.
Mm.
And he's using auto-tune as a tool to do that. T-Pain as well. People hate T-Pain.
Who's like, T-Pain?
He's the auto-tune guy. The guy who auto-tunes. He's the guy who's like, oh, he's auto-tune. He's done a bunch of gigs where it's just him and a guy playing keys. And he sings impeccable soul music without auto-tune. He's a musician. He's a session musician.
Mm, mm.
But he uses auto-tune to get the sound that he's looking for.
Yeah, okay.
If you're using auto-tune as a crutch because you can't sing and you're just, like, trying to make it sound good.
Yeah.
That's less good.
Yeah.
But if you're using auto-tune as a tool to find the sort of sound you're looking for, go ahead. I am...
So I should be less judgmental. And
yeah, you should be less of a dick, dude.
Yeah. Chill. That's probably good advice.
Yeah. Or I personally think that whatever you need to do to get your song as good as you can get it, I can do it. I don't care.
Justifying unethical acts.
Yeah, absolutely. If you need to, like, kidnap a, like, accordion player and, like, force him at gunpoint to play the chords you want, then do it. I don't care. If you're a guitarist and you want a soul backing track where there's an entire, like, gospel vocalist singing your name and it sounds really good, you didn't sing it, you didn't perform it, but it sounds good on the song, and that's what it all comes down to, if it sounds good on the song.
Mm.
So, stop bad-mouthing auto-tune.
Alright, I will. I will, actually. I'll stop that. It's quite a kind of snide, judgmental thing that's just me trying to impose my taste.
It's become one of those, like, sort of things that everyone just comes to bash on. But, yeah, I think it's a good tool.
Yeah.
Personally. Now we're down to the stage. We got our backing track.
That's awesome. So that's what we
we as a team.
That's what we made.
Just produced. It's like just sort of a chilling in the background sort of thing. We need a trumpet melody, and then we also need to integrate these two sections. So we have sort of, I feel like trumpet coming in here and some keyboards doing a chord ringing out through that thing.
I do.
To sort of introduce the elements before they come in as their own sort of thing.
Cool.
But we need a melody, and that is the trickiest section of the music process. And the most important.
Mm.
So, and let's just lay down a track right now. After having come up with this off the top of my head just now. One more time.
Woo-hoo! I'm liking this.
That's not it. That's not the one.
Oh, what? So how many would you go through on average before getting the one?
The take?
Yeah, the take. Because on my podcast, I just use the first take every single time.
Really?
You might not have noticed.
With this, I could just record it and move the notes to where they need to be with a mouse. But sometimes it's quicker to just lay down the takes and just get the one you want.
So you had that tune already in your head, and we're just wanting to manifest it in the world in the correct way.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And the way to do that is just by... Because it's difficult with these sort of animator ones where you're playing the note to a rhythm that's already set.
Mm.
And if you don't play the rhythm in the right order, it will trigger the rhythm at a time and it will just sound weird.
Yeah,
so a lot of the times you just need to just like write it down.
So would you write, and by writing it down you mean in using traditional notation? Or would you just go A, B, E, B, D?
So what I do is I
a
see these...
B hash.
This
hashtag.
Is a MIDI notation.
Right.
So, Musical Instrument Digital Interface is what that acronym actually stands for. It's sort of a programming language. I draw these little rectangles here on this little keyboard that's laid on its side. And the length is how long it goes for, and that's the note that it is.
So, yes.
So we just need one good take of that, and I'll just cut that out. I'm just going to pause it. That's like the kind of problem with doing this stuff. It normally takes a lot longer than an hour. So like you could come up with the melodies and everything that you want in an hour and lay them all down, but the fine tuning and getting it exactly the way you want it takes a lot longer.
Hmm.
So
given that I'm not paying you.
Yep. I'm not going to go
so delighted just by it.
But like, so during this podcast, I'm going to get the ideas the way I want them. And then I'm going to finish off with our charismatic bands. And I'm just going to fine tune it off the podcast, get everything clean, mix it together, get all the sounds good.
You're so generous. Are you sure? Because you know that I can't tell the difference.
But I could tell the difference.
Yeah.
And when I hear it, that's all I'm going to... I'm only going to be hearing the mistakes. So you want to have a little bit of mistakes in there. Because, nobody wants it perfect. Because it sounds lame perfect. We've talked about this quite a lot, but that's a lot of the problems that people who are just starting to make music come across is they'll have the melody, they'll have all the sounds they want, they'll have everything perfect, and they'll lay it down across the grid and be like, still doesn't sound quite right. And the reason it doesn't sound quite right is because it's too perfect. You did it too well.
Wokey wokey.
Maybe if I copied that wrong there. A doopity bit. There we go. So what I do now is I like to sort of have everything in concrete. So I will take that sort of programmed keyboard sample sort of stuff and I would mount it down to an audio file. And then it's set in stone. And that sort of just helps the creative process a little bit. Because it's like, in the olden days, say I'm Queen.
All right, you're Queen.
Thank you. Say I'm Queen. And I want to lay down the harmonies for a track. I bounce it to tape. And then it's set in stone. And because I'm Queen, I get a perfect first shot. Because impeccable harmonies. But something about having that set in stone sort of means that I have to stop sort of thinking about it for a little bit and can use the rest of my brain. So, 2, that's fine. Doop, doop, doo, doo, doo. Set that there. Call that.
I love it.
Yeah. Of course you do. It's perfect.
It is.
It's not. But it's a nice sort of base to work with. And then
so what more? What do you work with on top of that?
On top of the stuff I've recorded so far?
Yeah.
Well, I'd need a counter melody to fill in that gap there. And then, of course, I'd work towards combining the two sections. I'd bring back this sound.
Ben, ben, ben.
Ben, ben, ben. Record scratch to sort of introduce the section to it. And have like a trumpet swell here, maybe another brass swell and a different note there, and then. This isn't right. This isn't right at all. And at this point, I probably delete everything and start again.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because that's how it works. You eliminate all the bad ideas until you get to a good one, and then you build that good one until it's perfect. This is just running off the bat. So, if I was working on an actual project, and no offense, I'd probably delete everything and start from scratch. I'd keep the sounds.
Yes.
Because the sounds are where I want them, but the melody's not quite right.
Mm.
And the bass is an extension of that.
Mm.
But because I'm not working on an actual project, and I'm working on the Mitch-splaining intro theme, let's just keep going. Why not? We got stuff. We got things.
So,
yeah.
I think we've got to wrap up soon. For now, I'm going to be recording again with you. Ooh.
Nice. Yes. Continue.
So how about then we have a look at the finished product? I can go.
You can do your intro.
All right. Welkie, welkie, backy, backy. So it's been a week, and I have returned to Mitchell's wonderful sound emporium to hear the finished product of the new Mitch-splaining theme song, where I'll finally make the decision over which theme song I'm going to go with.
Well, it's been a week, but I only did like an extra 40 minutes.
Because you were going to do like 12 hours. And I was feeling so guilty.
And I got bored, so I didn't.
I'm really bad.
But yeah, I just basically added some elements to sort of this original sample to sort of blend that into the funk a little bit better. So I'll just get that now. Let's just give it a full run through.
Yeah, I'd love. Let's have a listen. That's amazing. Thank you so much.
So
I'm tearing up.
I've got about 40 seconds there. There's like two main points you can fade out. If you wanted to like introduce the theme of the episode or the topic, you could like just drop the volume a bit on this section here. Mm. And say, hey, this is today's episode. Welky, welky, etc., etc. We'll be doing this stuff. And then you can, like, bring it back up in time for the minor section and just groove that into the talking. Stop clapping.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I really love it. Thank you so much. So, how did you make it sound so good?
What do you mean?
So how many... I don't know the terminology. How many, like, tracks are going on there? How many different sounds could make that thing?
8, 9 tracks.
Whoa.
And basically, like, I've got some compressors and stuff to sort of sweeten the sound a little bit. I could explain what a compressor is if you like.
What's a compressor?
Okay, so...
So Mitchell's just got a thing up on the screen that's got loads of different bluey, purpley coloured swerves.
This is a multi-band compressor. It's basically just a bunch of compressors that work on different frequencies.
Mm.
But what a compressor does, right? The way I had it explained to me is picture you're in your car with your mom and you've got some music going.
Yeah.
It's playing some tunes.
Yeah.
Whenever the volume gets above a certain, like, loudness, your mom's like, well, that's too loud. I'm going to turn it down a bit.
Yeah.
Turn it down a bit. Basically, that's what a compressor does. Your mom just, like, turns down the volume whenever it gets above a certain threshold. And,
So it's a kind of machine mom.
It's a machine mom that lives inside the computer, yes. And it's used, it's sort of like, so like a guitar, right?
Mm.
A guitar amp compresses, like, just through the electronics automatically.
Right, okay.
Distortion itself is just a real heavy compression that, like, pretty much flattens stuff. And what it does, because there's, like, the fundamental frequency and then the harmonic frequencies above it, because it's lessening the dynamic range, it sort of makes the harmonics louder in relation to the fundamental, which gives it a nice tone. That's tedious audio engineering stuff. Basically, what it does is it makes it really jam. Yeah.
Jam City. Alright, so I think it's time for the final judgment. Let me just find the old opening and then I'll decide which one we're going to use from now on. Alright, give it a whirl. It's magical. I'm sticking with mine.
Okay, that's very fair.